dry, cracked, and thirsty. You can almost see the ground. You can almost see the ground on that day as it baked in the sun after 3.5 years of Yahweh-directed drought. 3.5 years of misery. And I'd have to tell you, as 21st century American Christians, it's hard for us even to imagine that. Because honestly, in a drought, the only thing I noticed is that the price of milk goes up about 10 cents a gallon. For the people of Israel, a people much closer to the edge, not just of poverty, but of true hunger that we don't really truly know, famine and drought was a word that meant death. It didn't just mean dry, cracked, thirsty ground. It meant hungry, thirsty people, babies with distended stomachs, political instability, and of course that dry, thirsty ground. And who could they blame for this? Who is at the top of their list of people to blame, or maybe of gods to blame? Could they blame Baal, the god that the king of Israel had begun to worship, that King Ahab took as his own? Baal, the god of the storm? Maybe they hadn't worshipped him faithfully enough. Perhaps another sacrifice to Baal or a fervent prayer to him could conjure up an answer to the cloudlessness and death of this drought. Of course, one might blame, as King Ahab did, the Lord. Or at least Elijah, the prophet who spoke on behalf of the Lord, and after all, he was an easy target. It seemed like he was the last one. Only he could be left to talk on behalf of the Lord. And then how long would this drought continue, Elijah? Tell us that if you are a prophet. How long must widows and their children starve with little more than flour and oil in their pantries? How long must people die? How long will God, the one Elijah claims is the true God, how long will he be deaf to their cries and blind to their problems? If he is the true God, and the Lord claims that he is, he ought to be there for his people. If he really truly is the only, the exclusive God, he ought to be able to prove it. And it's not just people like King Ahab or the Israelites who felt and thought this way. We feel that too. And for us, it's not probably a famine or a drought, at least not one like Elijah, Ahab, and the people of Israel suffered through, but our cry still goes up just like theirs did. How long? How long must we go without rain? How long must good people suffer? How long will it look like the evil are prospering, Lord? Ahab and his wife Jezebel had their answer to that question, and their answer to that question was just to really leave God behind in the dry, cracked, dusty ground. They chose instead, Ahab and Jezebel, to chase after a false god. And they listened not to the hard truth of the prophet Elijah, but to the flattering counsel of false prophets. And they went one step further than just listening to these false prophets of Asherah and Baal. They even used the government of Israel to subsidize their pagan worship. They chose the way of life that for them at least, seemed easier and more fun. If you're like me, it's easy to look back on Asherahs and Baals, and we're not even 100% sure what they looked like because all of those idols have been destroyed now, lost to history, and it seems so foolish. That's crass, outright gross idolatries. Those are pieces of metal carved with human hands or clay formed on the potter's wheel. They're not gods. And the people of our day could never be so foolish. They might not turn a hunk of wood or polished metal into a god they turn to when times get tough, but the people of our day are still assaulted by different kinds of false teachers, like TV evangelists and the false prophets out there who preach gospels that are full of flowery niceties but have no true biblical substance. Those people who sound good and have polished sermons, and they look good in their $2,000 suits and their arena-sized churches, and they'd never be so foolish as to bow down to a piece of wood. No, they could never be so crass or openly idolatrous. Their gods instead become something else, like the psychology of self-help and the empty shell of you do you and I'll do me, and this hollow chastening after and reaping of the wind, of an earthly glory that's not glory at all. That's nothing more than an illusion, something that merely appears to be there, but upon closer inspection is not at all. And before you cast stones at them, realize that you are not free of this kind of idolatry either. We do it too. It's not just some people who seem to us to be fools from thousands of years ago, sheep herders, uneducated and ignorant. It's not just some self-consciously self-righteous mob. It's not this group of people in some other place that limp along and waver between opposing ideas and philosophies. One group saying there is no God but knowledge and science, and another group saying there is no God but this I must do it, serve me type of idea. And it's not just people misled by charismatic televangelists. We fall for it. How many times have you had to choose between the one true God and something else? And the one true God loses. Is it church or a baseball game? Is it church, or maybe I want to watch the Packers play? Maybe it's a kid's sporting event versus worship. Or maybe it's not even coming to church. Maybe it's, should I go to work, or should I do the very God-pleasing thing of spending time with my family? How many times have you had to choose between defending Jesus in an interpersonal conversation and not doing that, and instead selling him down the river because you were afraid of telling the truth and standing firm in your faith? How many times have you valued your own reputation over the reputation of your God? And of all those times that God seems to lose, whether it's in worship or in your personal life, what are all those things he loses to then? What would you say are those things that take the top priority in our hearts? And God sees all of this. And he stands as he does in his word, and he calls on us to worship him alone, not the God of sports or the God of family. And we realize that our 21st century sensibilities, the God, lowercase g, God, he calls on us away from that one. It's not a chunk of wood. It's much more likely a stack of $100 bills or a glowing stream. He calls us away from the siren song of false religions that try to tell us Jesus was nothing more than a good example, or that he was merely a prophet. Yet we still have the audacity to stand before him wondering why our life is difficult and ask, how long? How long will I walk on this dry, dusty dirt? And if you listen, God answers. And it's a scary thing when we hear it, because he asks us then, how long? How long? How long will you weigh me, says God, against every other thing in your life, as if there were any comparison? And we look on in silence, because when God questions us like this, it's a frightful thing, and sheepishly wide-eyed and embarrassed that we thought we could come to him on our own terms. And we realize, separated by almost 3,000 years, we stand right next to those Israelites. Among that crowd of the people of Israel. And we have no case before God. Because now it becomes clear that God does not call us to worship him alone because he needs our worship. He does not call on us because he is weak without us. He calls on us to worship him. He calls on us to make him our top priority because he's the only one that can save us. And what fool would turn to a chunk of wood or polished metal or an inanimate object like money instead of the one true living God, the only one powerful to save? And we stand among the group of Israelites, God's people, not willing. And he comes to us again, and he comes to us again, and he begs us to follow him. But this time he doesn't come with awesome shows of power like we'll see. He doesn't come to us with jaw-slacking proofs of his sovereignty. God comes to us after thousands of years of calling to us with his patience, masked in the form of a little baby. He comes to us with Jesus. And he teaches us through a refugee from Nazareth who preached to harassed and helpless clouds and who enlisted outcasts as his ambassadors. He doesn't come in a roaring wind, but in a timelessly convincing whisper. He wins us over not with stunningly logical arguments, but with his son, who preaches a truth with an unseen authority, and then we see it. God, show us that in the dry, cracked ground is not some angry, vindictive God or even a God unable to save, but that he is our true God, the only God, who desperately wants to call us to himself, not for his benefit, but for our own benefit. And he does it with magnificent shows of power and awesome demonstrations, like fire that licks up a little water in a trough around an altar and that incinerates the bulls of sacrifice. He does it in impressive ways, but so many more times he chooses to come to us through his word, through Jesus, who preaches a truth with unseen authority. And until you see in Jesus that the Father is there, you'll never understand. And after he's won us over, after he's gotten our attention, and he wins the battle without nuclear bombs and without fire and brimstone, but with the death of the hero, he wins us over with Jesus. Do you see it yet? He is our one true God who comes unlike any other. You know, after Joseph Smith died, he stayed dead. After Muhammad died, he stayed dead. After the Buddha died, if he ever even really existed, there's nothing more than a bunch of shiny statues left. Your ancestors who have died before you and turned to dust, they are still dust. But our God Jesus, he's very much different from all of those. Because he did not stay dead. His grave is empty. Because he's not dead. He lives. And he calls you out of darkness because he lives. And he calls you away from the dryness of your spiritual drought. And he calls you to him because he is the only way, the only truth, the only life. And no one can get to the Father in heaven except through him. When the prophets of Baal, as you will see, cry out to their God, he says nothing. Nothing. And Elijah even mocks them. Maybe he's away on travel. Maybe he's in the bathroom. Maybe he's deep in thought. Maybe he's asleep and you need to call louder and wake him up. When the people cry out to their gods of this age, they leave them hanging. Money does not come back to you after you've frittered it away. Yourself can only help you so much before it gets tired. And Elijah cries out to the people of God, and he calls them on behalf of the Lord. And when they respond, you must listen. And when he tells them of their God, they like what they hear. And we'll stand next to them in that crowd, the people of Israel, and we'll watch Elijah repair the altar of God with 12 stones representing 12 tribes God promised that he would always be with. And we'll hear the name Israel, which means struggles with God. And we'll struggle with God, and we'll refuse, like Israel did that very first time. We'll refuse to let go of God when we wrestle with him. I won't let go until he blesses me. And we'll take it all in, and with wondering hearts, and we'll see the sacrifice and the wood and the trench and the dry, cracked ground all of a sudden soaked with water once, and then twice, and then three times, and we'll hear that water trickling and cracking and filtering. And with the fresh memory of the prophets of Baal slashing themselves and crying out to a God who will never answer because he's no God at all. And beneath it all, the sincere cries of Elijah will see that our God is the only way. And then with the crowd, we will acclaim those strugglers with God like us. We will cry out that the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God, and there is no other. He is God, the one true God. There is no one like him. He's not a lifeless piece of wood or metal. He's not some self-interested autocrat. He's not a blind watchmaker or a distant architect. He is the God who loves us for our own benefit, not his own. He is the I am who I am, who is our God for us and in us and through Jesus Christ, our God with us. And there is no other God. How could you so foolishly turn to anyone but him? We'll watch the entire scene unfold. And then today you're going to leave, hopefully after church. And when you leave, you'll be tempted. Mothers will be tempted to think that God has left them because they see their children struggling and hurting. Parents will question the value of passing down the knowledge of God and who he is and what he's done. Teachers will be tempted to teach about our God only as a God of commands, the spoiler of fun and the troubler of all who like fun, instead of the God who gives us life. You may be tempted to turn to false gods. I know it'll happen, like money or doctors or family as you struggle. As you struggle to become a mother, as you struggle with memories of your own mother who once was here but now is gone, don't fall for it. Don't turn to your idols. The Lord, he is God. And that God has shown his people at many times and in various ways that he is the only true God. He showed it most impressively, not at the prophet of Baal when he sends fire from heaven. He showed it most impressively through his son Jesus Christ, who did not stay dead. The ground was dry and cracked. The people praying to Baal, helpless to end it. And Elijah sent his servant to look out over the sea, not once, not twice, but seven times, and he saw it, a cloud on the horizon over the sea, no bigger than a hand. And to those who returned to the Lord and saw him as the only true God, one drop fell first and then many and on that parched stretch of earth. Baal was not the god of the storm after all. Only God could do that. And he would do it again, too, when he would walk on the waves of the storm, or when his disciples would marvel, who is this that even the wind and the waves obey? Only God could do that. When you watch the people of Israel, when you see them in your mind's eye and you hear them, turn to God. Praise him and shout out with joy that the Lord, he is God, the only one true. Please stand. I'll read to you now the text from 1 Kings chapter 18. So Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, and Ahab went to meet Elijah. When he saw Elijah, he said to him, "Is that you, you troubler of Israel?" "I have not made trouble for Israel," Elijah replied, "but you and your father's family have. You have abandoned the Lord's commands and have followed the Baals. Now summon the people from all over Israel to meet me on Mount Carmel, and bring the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table." So Ahab sent word throughout all Israel and assembled the prophets on Mount Carmel. Elijah went before the people and said, "How long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal is God, follow him. But the people said nothing. Then Elijah said to them, I am the only one of the Lord's prophets left, but Baal has 450 prophets. Get two bulls for us. Let Baal's prophets choose one for themselves and let them cut it into pieces and put it on the wood, but not set fire to it. I will prepare the other bull and put it on the wood, but not set fire to it. Then you call on the name of your God, and I will call on the name of the Lord. The God who answers by fire, he is God. Then all the people said, what you say is good. Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, choose one of the bulls and prepare it first, since there are so many of you. Call on the name of your God, but do not light the fire. So they took the bull given them and prepared it. Then they called on the name of Baal from morning till noon. Baal, answer us, they shouted. But there was no response. No one answered. And they danced around the altar they had made. At noon, Elijah began to taunt them. Shout louder, he said. Surely he is a god. Perhaps he's deep in thought or busy or traveling. Maybe he's sleeping and must be awakened. So they shouted louder and slashed themselves with swords and spears, as was their custom, until their blood flowed. Midday passed, and they continued their frantic prophesying until the time for the evening sacrifice. But there was no response. No one answered. No one paid attention. Then Elijah said to all the people, come here to me. They came to him, and he repaired the altar of the Lord, which had been torn down. Elijah took 12 stones, one for each of the tribes descended from Jacob, to whom the Lord had come, saying, your name shall be Israel. With the stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord, and he dug a trench around it large enough to hold 2 seahs of seed. He arranged the wood, cut the bull into pieces, and laid it on the wood. Then he said to them, fill 4 large jars with water and pour it on the offering and on the wood. Do it again, he said, and they did it again. Do it a third time, he ordered, and they did it the third time. The water ran down around the altar and even filled the trench. At the time of the sacrifice, the prophet Elijah stepped forward and prayed, Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known today that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant, and have done all these things at your command. Answer me, Lord. Answer me, so these people will know that you, Lord, are God, and that you are turning their hearts back again. Then the fire of the Lord fell and burned up the sacrifice, the wood, the stones, and the soil, and also licked up the water in the trench. When all the people saw this, they fell prostrate and cried, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. Then Elijah commanded them, seize the prophets of Baal. Don't let anyone get away. They seized them, and Elijah had them brought down to the Kishon Valley and slaughtered there. And Elijah said to Ahab, go eat and drink, for there is the sound of a heavy rain. So Ahab went off to eat and drink, but Elijah climbed to the top of Carmel, bent down to the ground, and put his face between his knees. Go and look toward the sea, he told his servant. And he went up and looked. There's nothing there, he said. 7 times, Elijah said, go back. The 7th time, the servant reported, a cloud as small as a man's hand is rising from the sea. So Elijah said, go and tell Ahab, hitch up your chariot and go down before the rain stops you. Meanwhile, the sky grew black with clouds, the wind rose, a heavy rain started falling, and Ahab rode off to Jezreel. This is the word of the Lord.